Members, we are meeting the Eastern Cape Department of Health. What we want to get from Eastern Cape is for them to tell us, just to give us a briefing on to the baby deaths that happened in the Eastern Cape. When you talk about the babies, you talk about infants and neonates. So they'll be telling us as to what happened. Having them told us what happened, they will tell us what strategies they have, as we're an oversight committee. They'll tell us what strategies do they have to avoid those situations. We're not very specific, but we wanted the institution where the latest death that we heard about was in Umtata. So we wanted that institution to be part of the meeting so that they can tell us what challenges, and we could hear from the horse's mouth, from those that were involved. But there are other deaths that we've got an interest in, which are still baby deaths. I know, members, it's not only Eastern Cape. There are other provinces that have been affected by baby deaths. I know Northern Cape, Ndabe Mohoro, had some baby deaths too. I know Gauteng had some baby deaths. As far as Gauteng is concerned, the committee went to Gauteng, and the committee has made a report. But the aim is to make sure that we try and meet all those provinces, except Gauteng, where the committee had gone. And here there are strategies as to how they avoid, especially that we always talk about the Millennium Development Goals. And the interest is to know whether we'll be able to meet those Millennium Development Goals if things are happening this week. So we've got Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape, I want to apologize. We were told that you were going to be coming at 10:30 because of flights from Eastern Cape. But we saw you coming earlier than that time. So we thank you very much for coming earlier than the time that you expected. But unfortunately, we had another schedule. So we're meeting the minister who was briefing us on what are their strategic plans as far as the strike is concerned. So that meeting took a little bit longer than what we anticipated. So we apologize for not starting exactly at 10:30 as we were scheduled. So we apologize for that. We hope that that is not going to hamper you. That is not going to change your tickets. But we'll try and make sure that by 1:00 we're finished. And I'm told that the deans of faculties of health sciences, which we wanted to see today, are around. They are seeing the Department of Health. Maybe they might pop in and see us after 12. But we'll see how we handle that. So, Eastern Cape, we welcome you, MEC, with that. We are very happy that you are here yourself. We know Wednesdays are usually cabinet days, but we are very thankful that you are here yourself. We appreciate it. The people that you are seeing here, MEC, when I say MEC, I'm including the whole delegation. You are seeing members of parliament and both houses, the National Assembly and the NCOP, they are all here. The National Assembly is the Portfolio Committee for Health. The NCOP is the committee, is a select committee for women, children, and people with disability. Maybe let me tell you the names of the people next to you, MEC. The ladies from the National Assembly, that's one of our ladies, that's one of our nurses in the committee, Umme Sekgwale Desai. She's from the National Assembly, Honorable Sekgwale Desai. Next to her, we've got Dr. Honorable Mamoluthuli, Albert Luthuli. It's interesting, Albert Luthuli. But she looks younger than Albert Luthuli. Oh, you think that Albert Luthuli died? We still have Albert Luthuli. Next to Umamu Albert Luthuli, we've got Undade Ibrahim Suleiman, who's the whip of the committee. On this other side, we've got Umamu Mswele Mzalawa. Should I say Gumzala Wam is my cousin? Should I say that? Okay. Beyond Uma Mumseli, we've got Mike Waters. You can see he's got a tie there, sitting there, sitting next to a lady, Umamu Dudley, Honorable Dudley. Next to Umamu Dudley, we've got Uma Emma. She's the one who was leading the delegation to Gauteng, looking at the baby death. And I think for some reason, I don't know whether to say you protected some of the officials of Gauteng. I think she protected them. She was not very hard on them. Beyond Umamu Emma, we've got Undate Khanare. Beyond Undate Khanare, Undate Khanare is my cousin too. We went to Free State to work in the mines, and then we got related by working in the mines. Everything. Beyond Undate Khanare, we've got Honorable Kenya, Uma Kenya. Uma Kenya, you can see, he has that like it's from Eastern Cape. Just look at the hairstyle, it's from Eastern Cape, that hairstyle. Beyond Uma Kenya, of course, Ume Mafuolo. She's a very good teacher. She teaches us to be short when we ask questions. So she'll ask very short questions. Beyond Ume Mafuolo, we've got the leader of the NCOP, Unda Gigi. There used to be a Dr. Gigi Mbeke, but this one is Gigi Mohoro. We've got Gigi Mohoro, she's the leader. And beyond him, we've got Udarel West. Are you worth something, Dara?
Yes, well, very much.
Well, you worth something.
Very much.
Interestingly, we've got a lot of people that we don't know, but we don't have to introduce them, but I suspect they're all from the media. So we welcome you, media. I won't say who you are. We don't know who you are, but I think I know the person who's got a tie beyond that. We wanted to give them a court interview. I mean, we wanted to take them out of this place. But they told us that we'll go for a court interview. But we know that if they go for a court interview, by the time they get it, will be finished in this meeting. So we can fire them and ask them to go for a court interview. By the time they come back, then it will be finished. So, MEC, those are the members of parliament that are going to be listening to your presentation and are going to be asking you questions after the presentation. Oh, but by the way, we've got a secretariat. I'm not going to mention them, but they are here with us.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair, as well as to the Honorable Committee. Indeed, true, we were here earlier. I suggested that be so, where earlier the arrangement was that we should attempt getting here in the morning. Honorable Chair, I could ill afford the inviting the eye of the committee again. I want to first apologize for the meeting of the 11th, in which we sent the head of department to come here, perhaps which was not very much appreciated by the committee. I profusely tender an apology up front. We had quite a predicament at hand, and at the time also with the prospect of an industrial action that was at the stage, at its very mooting stages. We were kind of caught between really the rock and the hard place. There were also other things that were taking place in the province. I really apologize for that. Perhaps even before we deal with the presentation, I must say that we have brought here a team, notwithstanding the challenges we've left behind with the industrial action at the stage at which it is. The team, if I may just introduce, next to me is Dr. Pillay, who is the SG of the department. I do understand that he's quite familiar to many of the honorable members here. Next to Dr. Pillay is the General Manager, Umaminomvula Kwajo, responsible for the program Saving Mothers, Saving Babies. As well, Ngapo Yagwake is Professor Nazo, who's head of pediatrics station based in Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital. and Cesar Cupello is in the communications division but attached to my office in the province. And we also have Professor Buga, who is head of obstetrics and gynecology, also based in Nelson Mandela Academic. In trying to come closer, perhaps, to the expectation of the committee, we have made we've prepared a presentation that I will ask the SG of the department to lead in presentation. But the entire team is available to take responses, explanations, hopefully to meet the expectations of the committee. And with your permission, Honorable Chair, can I ask Dr. Pillay to lead the presentation?
Thanks, MG. So we'll allow Dr. Pillay to go on. You can click on Dr. Pillay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to all honorable members. I know I'm ceremoniously sent out the last time. I hope this time I'm a little bit more welcome. First thing we want to say up front, that any death, whether it's one or many, but any death is regrettable. And we, if it can be avoided, we should be trying to avoid it. And our commitment towards solving this problem is serious, and I'll make the presentation to look at it. I will take the presentation into five different parts. The first part is the purpose of the thing, the second presentation. The second part is giving you background about the teams that we have put in to investigate the problem and come up with recommendations. We will present openly the findings, and because we believe that if you're trying to solve the problem, we should admit what the problem is, and we'll place the findings in front of you today. You don't need to go promotion of access to information. We'll give it to you. We'll give you the contributing factors as we see from the findings, and the, what strategies we are implementing or intend to implement. You must understand that this is a process and not everything has been done so far. The purpose of this presentation is to inform the stakeholders and the findings of the investigations undertaken by the State Department of Health. And notwithstanding that, we also felt that to be non-biased and to be objective and to be to get a better solution, we engaged the National Department of Health to send us a task team, which I will introduce just now, to do the investigations independently of us. And that was a retrospective investigation from January to April. We continued to engage this task team, and this task team is continuing to work with us on concurrent and prospective interventions, with also developing strategies that will be used by the department to mitigate against morbidity and mortality, both in mothers and in babies. And the purpose of this is to tell you what they have done. The Millennium Development Goals and the Provincial Growth and Development Plan have set targets for the department, and that is to reduce to 2/3 the under 5 mortality by 2014 and to reduce by 3/4, or 75%, the maternal mortality by 2014. We want to state up front that this is a huge challenge for us because we are not coming near those figures, and we have to make urgent interventions. And that is why, for ourselves, we felt that we needed to look at this with fresh eyes independently. Anecdotally, it has been told to us in the past that most of these problems are due to HIV. And we said, no, let's be scientific about it and we'll start to look at it. The figures are there for you. If you look at for January, if you look at the number of deaths we had, February, March, April, those deaths are there. And if you put that in a chart, this is what it is per 1,000 deliveries that we have had. Now, if you look at this from the statistics of 2009, and that's the statistics that we have from the from what we have, if you look at the Nelson Mandela, the OR Tambo district, we have got a perinatal mortality rate of 43.8%, Now, if you take this against the national norm of 18 per 1,000 live births, then you'll find that we are very high. And this is the average, not for that particular year of 2009, but was taken as averages over the last year. We wanted to say that this problem is, we take the last 8 years that we have studied, and we are showing that this problem has been there for a long time, and we need to sort it out. Now, if you go further into this year, from January to April, during the time when this was brought to the fore, if you look at the total number of deaths as we see there, broken down into the different weight categories, you'll find that even that is unacceptably high. And if you compare this region or this district to other districts, it was slightly higher, but we'll explain the reasons for that and what the findings showed about that also. However, we must say that the phenomenon is not just in our province, and we compare ourselves to KwaZulu-Natal or Gauteng, our figures are a little bit better, but that does not say that we need to relax about it. In fact, if anything, we need to be more vigorous in how we alleviate this problem. Now, if you take the OR Tambo region, we had 430 deaths per 1,000. And if you verse that as a province where we have 38 per 1,000, that's showing clearly, and you take the national statistics of 18, we definitely need an intervention that needs to take place. So as we said, the National Department of Health was engaged, the extent of the task team, that's the ministerial task team. If you look at the names of people, all of them are prominent, well-known people in their fields. Professor Jack Moodley, the Professor Emeritus of Obstetrics and Gynecology. You've got Tim Wilson, Dr. David Greenfield, Dr. Nat Cole, Dolly Nasulu, and they were accompanied by our own person who was the Director for Nursing Services, Mrs. Dana Morapedi. And we gave them unlimited access to all information. They did a retrospective study for 4 years. Some of the findings of the retrospective study is what we'll be doing. We want to say that we have not completed this yet, because we have still engaged them to do concurrent studies for us at the present moment for June, July, and August. And they are also engaged with developing strategies that we will be using that will be implemented to alleviate this problem. Their findings were, and I'm presenting the findings as it is, if you take out all babies that were less than 500 grams, because that constitutes an abortion rather than a stillbirth, then you had 247 deaths, with 64% in Nelson Mandela Academic or the Mthatha General Hospital and 36 in the peripheral hospitals and clinics, which gives you 51.6 per 1,000. This is 3 to 4 times higher than the other provincial tertiary hospitals, but there are reasons for that. And they decided to do their findings in where they took less than 1.999 kgs, or grams, as a neonatal marker, more than 2.5 kgs as a marker for labor, and more than 4 kgs as a marker for poor intervention. They also looked at the HIV status of the people that was there. And this is a huge problem. Despite all the HCT campaigns and everything like this, we found that of the neonatal deaths, 46.9% were HIV positive. The most important part of it is that we have 34.6% of this, more than one-third of these babies that died had an unknown HIV status, which shows a gap in the primary health care and the early testing and the presentation. And the issue about migrant mothers coming to deliver at their place of birth and not carrying their antenatal cards and not having their status as known. And that's a huge problem. But that was a finding. There was also a finding that the death rate is increasing. And it is in the last 3 years, it has been continuously increasing in a progressive rate. And therefore, we need other studies. Prior to this, we said this could be solely associated with the HIV pandemic. Contrary to belief, while this is generally the case in more than 50% to 60%, the findings showed that there was a significant number of deaths that were attributable to clinical, administrative, and infrastructural factors. We are not proud of that, but we felt that we have to acknowledge that, because then we know what we need to fix. And we're going to place those findings. The neonatal care came from overcrowding, Not enough equipment of incubators, ventilators. Not enough having equipment of oximeters, infusion pumps, poor monitoring of the patients. Staff shortage. Now, in staff shortage, we don't necessarily mean numbers. We mean skilled people who are experienced and can do this. If you're taking a person working in a neonatal unit, that person needs to be experienced and he needs to be a neonatal trained nurse rather than just an ordinary pediatric nurse. We found the training to be inadequate for the doctors and the nurses. Prior to this, we had doctors, I mean, South African qualified doctors working in our peripheral institutes, can't do caesarean sections, can't do anesthetics. We have got nurses that have, in the olden days, that when they qualified, they went, after qualification, they went and did 1 year midwife. Now they go for the degree course, and they will do 6 weeks of midwifery, and then they are considered as midwives. And so this is the problem. We had, because of infrastructural challenge, no kangaroo nursing for mothers at Amdata. But more important than this, many of the mothers were not with their babies. And that's a big significant factor because we've got people coming from rural areas and then they've got the other babies, which is a priority, so they leave their babies with us. And we have staff shortage and a mother not next there to look after the baby and being the first red alert to inform us of any problems. You have to be more, you have to increase your supervision, and that's what we didn't have. In managing labor, the findings were that there was poor monitoring. Simple things like a partogram was not fully understood and not done properly. This was the findings. They felt that the findings showed that there were poor early detection of problems, and in many cases, there was indecisiveness and late intervention because the staff were inexperienced, the doctors were inexperienced, and so there is no protocols in place. As I said, there was a shortage of staff in terms of skilling. I've explained the issue about the skill of the doctors and the nurses. It's sad to say that we have 64 peripheral hospitals, in 46, we can't provide a 24/7 cover for caesarean sections because we do not have doctors adequately to do the caesarean sections and to do the anesthetics. There's a lack of equipment. We had a problem with our emergency medical services. We had a fleet emergency medical service contract that was a problem. And between January to April, for the whole provinces, and I think you might have read about this, we had plus or minus 80 ambulances for the whole provinces. In those ambulances also, the staff, we found that 312 were not even fully registered to the HPCSA or having PDP licenses. And then there was delayed referrals, that there were no protocols in place to make sure that patients are delivered on time and that they are transferred adequately. There were ad hoc decisions that were taken. There was no early detection of problems, and there was no decisive early referral. And there was no planning of a confinement where you decided that this must be done because of this problem, and you plan it out and do it in advance. This is another problem that we have poor inter-provincial collaboration. Some of our hospitals are just 1 hour away from Potchefstroom or 2 hours from Durban, but because of provincial boundaries, you have to transport them for 4 hours to Amdata, whereas you could have just taken them across the border on the other side 1 hour away. In a pregnant mother, that's a big amount of time. So the outreach programs were inadequate. There were poor training and supervision because of the shortage of staff. Even if you send people to go and train people, they didn't have the time for you. Almost all hospitals within that area could not provide 24-hour cover for theater cover. In the olden days, many of us who are gray like me will know that one doctor did a caesarean section. We went on to then say two doctors can do a caesarean section. Now we put first world rules where you have to have three doctors for a caesarean section. If the doctor has got four doctors in the hospital, how are you going to do a caesar? You can't put four or three doctors on call every day, 24 hours. In other countries, nurses are doing caesarean sections. But here you will ask the three doctors to do it. And therefore, if you come to at night or over weekends, we don't have the ability to do this. The midwife program, as I explained to you, you can get 6 weeks of training as a nurse, and you can qualify as a midwife. We have huge equipment shortage and distribution of equipment. Our infrastructure budget that was there was to totally, we couldn't buy the equipment we need. And essential equipment we are having shortage of, like CTG, CTG paper, suction catheters, resuscitation equipment, and they felt that you can't run a service unless those things are put in place. The findings showed that there were many contributing factors, and the contributing factors included teenage pregnancies, unwanted pregnancies, a lot. There was an issue about repeated termination of pregnancies. People were just going and having three or four terminations as a method of contraception. And that then the os becomes incompetent, and then you get a lot of premature babies that is coming. There's late presentation and defaulting for the antenatal clinics. And we have got a problem where Cytotec is just being sold on the street corners, and this is an abortificant and causes labor to come on at different times. As I said, one third of the babies were unknown HIV status. Another important factor was migrant mothers. People come, they do the antenatal classes wherever they're working, but they want to deliver at home. And when they come home to deliver, they don't carry the antenatal cards, and they don't carry these things, and they don't know the HIV status. And there's no uniformity in the reporting criteria, and we do not have a national health information system where I can just punch this person and find out what the blood results are. But risky behavior, alcohol and violence, and this is really a contributory factor in many ways. In terms of the management of patients at the district hospitals, they found that the primary health care was a challenge in the sense that many of the people did not have the basic antenatal care training. We were not able to attract and retain staff. The outreach was not adequate, and the training of the staff was sporadic, and it was not continuous. As I said, most of the district hospitals could not do CIS all the time. Referral system, and the inability of the few doctors due to shortage. What happens if you have just four doctors in a rural area? You take two doctors away for training, you collapse the rural area. So we'll tell you what we are doing about that. And as I said, the nurse in New York. The EMS had long distance to travel, and we didn't have patient transport vehicles. And that's another issue that we were looking at. If I show you this map, if you look at Mount Islet, you are just 1 hour away from Port Jefferson. From Tabankulu, if you pay to hospital, you are just 2 hours away from Port Jefferson. But you'll take the person all the way to Omtata General Hospital, and you really create problems in that way. So maternal presentation, these are the strategies that were told to us that we need to implement. Now we need to say some of them have been implemented, some of them in the process of being implemented, and this is an ongoing implementation program. It's not like a silver bullet to this thing, and we are still working on this. First thing that they said is that we must improve health promotion and health education. And there's a whole issue that we have gone on is social compact and community mobilization. We are saying that to attract people into universities and other places, we'll have to choose people from the community, train them from the community, and ask them to go back to those communities rather than take the universities to train them, and then they don't go back to the places where they come from. Even if we don't get the most intelligent, at least we'll get people from those places. We said we need to improve the antenatal care services with protocols and early problem detection. There is somehow a belief that you should only present to the antenatal clinic when you're 5 months pregnant. We don't know where this belief comes from. We need to break that belief because we're asking people to come in before the time. And so this is what we are trying to look at. CISO and others are in an extensive education program regarding this. The whole issue about the HCT campaign is also being used to reinforce people to check their status even before they fall pregnancy. And we are reinforcing the issue of choices, the prevention of pregnancy, contraception and condom use. And we have increased the number of sites in which you can do termination of pregnancies for unwanted pregnancies so that we don't get these mothers presenting late with abortificants and things like that. Started the program now, it has not reached all the places, but we said we have to reintroduce BANK. BANK, for those who know, is basic antenatal care. Following the protocol, filling the cards, doing the basics, which is routine, but doesn't happen to be routine because over a process of time, it just falls away. Getting the protocols in place and getting early problem detection. Some of the things we will think is as basic, yet when you get the antenatal card and the person comes to Nelson Mandela Academic, they sit with the problem because at that point in time, the results are not there. Something is missing in the card and you have to find it. So we have to get people to understand that these things are important and we need to do it. There's an outreach program that we are putting in place, and that some of it has been put in place to reinforce the basic antenatal care training. And we're saying there's continuous support for the Saving Mothers, Saving Babies project to the extent that in the revitalization of primary health care, we are prioritizing the MOUs, which is the maternal obstetric units. We've insisted now that adverse incident reporting linked with continuous medication, continuing medical education and protocol review takes place at all district hospitals. In the past, it was taking place at Nelson Mandela Academic, but it was not linked to the districts. Now it has become linked to the districts, and we will show you some of those things. We have started off a program which is called ESMO, Essential Steps in the Management of Obstetric Emergencies. It has reached 16 of the district hospitals so far, and there's a program to take it to all, such that everyone is covered. We have successfully recruited 91 doctors to go into the peripheral areas, thanks to the minister allowing us to employ doctors, and then we have intensified our Seva Landa project where we have trained doctors, but they didn't leave us. Now, if you remember in the past, what we did was that we told you that there were few doctors in the peripheries. Now, if you take these doctors out for training, the peripheries collapse. So what we did, we took 8 doctors into 4 teams, and we are training these doctors in anesthetics and cesarean sections. And we have then said to these doctors, you will go out for 2 months to each of the peripheral hospitals, relieve the doctors there, and then those doctors will come in for training for 2 months. And then we have arranged accommodation, training facilities, and all for those doctors to come in. And then we have a rotation basis of it. And then it's linked on to continuing medical education. Of the first team of 8 doctors that we have trained now, some of them will be just going to be finishing. You must understand, these doctors that we send are also going to do some basic training at the place. So they need 6 months training each. So they're going to be completing in 2 months' time. And then the program will start from there. We're also saying that there must be an in-reach program, because as we said, is that when these doctors become available and they go to relief, then those doctors will come in for an in-reach. They will come in to come to Amtata or to Nelson Mandela or to Port Elizabeth complex. They will stay there for 2 months, learn how to do anesthetics, learn how to do cesarean sections, while the locum doctors will provide cover where they are. We have now got a structured outreach program by the specialists to do further training in district hospitals. And we're trying to get this whole idea of team building, because, you know, the whole idea is a nurse sits in the maternity, the doctor is not there, phones the doctor and says, we think this is a fetal distress, and the doctor doesn't even look at the patient and says, send the patient on the left side, give oxygen or something like that. Now we're saying, let's get a team building so that they understand that you're managing this patient together, and if some other professional talks to you, respect it, because they will not be talking to you just like that. So understand each other that they're also trained. We are procuring equipment, but we have to readjust the budget. We're fighting regarding budget. We're looking for alternative sources, but we'll have to really buy a lot of equipment. We have said that we'll have to convert Nelson Mandela Hospital so that we can get the process of kangaroo care. And we have now put out kits, thanks to the HIV program, that, you know, the test kits and other things. And, you know, a simple thing like a test kit for syphilis was not available. Because that is because of NHLS and us, it's a business issue for them. But we've just bought these test kits now because we're looking at it. The task team is now developing protocols. They're giving out bank and books that is going to be given out. And the protocols for referral early detection is coming through, and that will be done. The antiretroviral program has been a big boost. And we're hoping with the HCT program, we'll be able to, mother-to-child transmission programs with the BCG for all newborns. And then you said priority this drug distribution for pregnant mothers. The MOUs have got a priority courier service that actually delivers to them so that we don't get disrupted. The strategy is to early problem detection and referral protocol. It's been developed now, it's been sent out, it's been tested, and it's a continuous ongoing program. And we are saying that the clinical audit will also inform that and improve it at any point in time. Proud to say that now that we have more than 214 ambulances in the province, and we have taken a decision that where it's more than 300 kilometers it's to transport a patient, it's better to transport by air ambulance because it's cheaper. We did the cost-benefit analysis as compared to a road transport. The department has dedicated ambulances for obstetric units. One of the things that we found in the rural areas that mothers do not have a cell phone, they do not have the ability to contact us, so we built halfway houses in late pregnancy, during the nights, and other places they can come and stay. Which places are connected? We have built already 8 of that. 2 are nicely operational at the present moment. And at the present moment, we are proud to say that we have got an interprovincial agreement that is signed between us and the three provinces, KwaZulu-Natal, with the HOD, the Sibongile Zungu, with Prof. Alzam in Western Cape. Because on the other side, it's easy to just go to Naizna and other places also. So we've got an inter-provincial collaboration team, and it's an exchange program where some of their cardiac patients, but we have put that thing in place, which is it's something that we feel we are one country. But just putting this in place, and I can give you the statistics here, you can look at the referral patterns for January, February, March, April, and May. And just look now in July, after this has come in, and show you that there's more than a 50% reduction in the referral patterns by strengthening the peripheral units and making that happen. And that's quite good. If you look at the second quarter that we looked now, after the interventions have come in, and this is too early to say it, maybe we are just too vigilant now, but there's more than a 50%. What is needed is to sustain this, bring it down further, come down to the national norms, and improve the program further. We are not satisfied with where it is at the present moment. And we are also saying it might be just because there is a vigilance now that this is happening, but it's important to sustain that vigilance. We are strengthening the clinical audit process in the sense that now all district hospitals, regional and tertiary hospitals have been instructed to hold perinatal mortality meetings. We have instituted PIP, and this is now being strengthened. That is a perinatal problem identification program, and look at how that happens. And the department, the recommendation that they made from this committee on confidential inquiry into maternal deaths, they have made a lot of recommendations to us, and we are saying let's look at implementing those recommendations and see how we work with them to develop protocols. There is a provincial adverse incident committee on maternal and neonatal deaths, and we have a register now of all neonatal and maternal deaths, and we have got our quality assurance person who is looking into that and giving us a report at every fortnightly EMT meeting. Just to give you an example of a perinatal meeting, I need to stress, the perinatal meetings are not to find blame. It's an educational process. If the moment you start finding blame in this, you're going to have a problem. So as we said to you, we said analyze the process and the cause of the death, find out whether there were avoidable factors, find out about the medical management, whether it was appropriate. We're also going on reviewing the quality of the records, because it becomes important that we start to reinforce this. This is a big problem about record keeping and then doing a final assessment. I'm not just going to go through this, it's in your pack, but we'll show you what we give to people, and we only discuss the case. And this is a case of a baby who had hydrocephalus and passed away. But again, we ask, was the management the best that the patient could have received? What else could we have done? Was the patient managed according to what the best was? Was the death avoidable? How can we improve the process going forward? And that's how we conduct this case. We are not saying that we have all the answers, because we have many challenges. One of the challenges we face here, if you look at 2008, 2008 we had 1,696 births, 2009, 1,665. But now, in 2010, we have 1,922 projected. So it shows you that the number of deliveries is just increasing dramatically. And if you look at the Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital right now, while we are proud that there's a dramatic improvement in the perinatal mortality rate, thanks to the outreach program and the implementation of these recommendations from early June, this must be seen against the demand for services. What happens is, as you improve services, people who have gone to the private sector come back to you, and we have got a 257% bed occupancy with a CSIR rate of almost 80%, and you can look at the table next door in the next slide to show you that at Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital, we are sitting with a 257% bed occupancy. Now, the decision to take is, do you go build more beds or do you build the periphery itself? And our decision is to take the services to the peripheries, and we need to build the district hospitals up and make that so that primary health care becomes there. Having said that, we can't neglect the situation, we have to take care. And I want to thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. You can switch off your... your gadget there. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, MSC. Thank you very much, Mr. D. We are pleased with your presentation. Maybe let me try and go back to some of the reasons why we wanted to. Firstly, we were devastated to hear these deaths occurring all over the country, specifically in the Eastern Cape. And obviously, we've got this target of Millennium Development Goals of 2015 that we got worried as to whether the country is going to be able to meet those. So we wanted you to come and tell us what's going on and what are your strategies, just to give us hope that as South African community people, we must just have hope that this is not going to happen further and probably will be able to meet the Millennium Development Goals. Thank you for your apology, and I think everybody has accepted it on what happened the last time. But the reason why we wanted, we said to the HOD it was going to be difficult to allow him to make a presentation was because we wanted those people that are involved in the work themselves so that they can tell us, even if the presentation is going to be done by him, but we want them to comment as to whether are they being given the tools to do the work, those people that are involved. And we're very happy that they are here. Probably they'll tell us. So that was the reason. One of the things that has been mentioned, was mentioned that day, of the HOD coming alone, was that there's a lack of finances in the Eastern Cape. And in fact, he said there was a moratorium in traveling and doing all sorts of things. Obviously, that makes our tummies to shiver. It creates butterflies in our stomachs because we knew that there's a challenge. Now, most of these challenges, you can sort them out when you've got money. It really worried us that he's saying we don't even have money to come to Cape Town. Now, the challenges that we're seeing in this case are going to need money. Now, if you don't have money to travel, how are you going to have money to do these things that your strategy is? Obviously, we were worried that we wanted to hear from you. And I hear here we're talking about outreach program. And we know you've got university there, Walter Sisulu University, which has got a Faculty of Health Sciences. And what I know is that there's a joint establishment which was not working well, which is not working well. Now, the interest is to that skill that is in the university. How easy is it to access and make sure that it assists you in what you're doing? So those are some of the things that probably they will give us hope. There's a document that has just come from Eastern Cape, which talks about nurses not being trained, that because there's no money, no nurses are going to be trained from a particular time to a particular time. And yet on the other side, we're saying that we've got plans, strategies of making sure that things are going to happen. Now, we don't know which is which, but you are here to explain to us. I was just trying to say we called you so that you could give us some hope. And, you know, as people who are doing oversight, I don't think we're here. We know the problems, what the problems are. But part of us is to try and assist wherever we can assist, because we're these people who are elected by those people. And if we've got to make people understand, we're elected members, we've got constituencies, we can make people understand on certain things that are there. So that's why we said probably we needed to see you so that you can explain to us, so that we can explain to them and help you. So those are some of the things that made us to call you to come and explain certain things. In your map there, I didn't see this. You had some deaths too in the Kahlamba area. There were some baby deaths in that area. And that Kahlamba area is very close to Bloemfontein. It's about 2 hours to move from Alon North to Bloemfontein. Yet it's about 4 hours to move from Alon North to East London. But I didn't hear you talking about the Bloemfontein one, because it's your next door too. Just like KZN, just like Western Cape, it's your next door. And people there have been complaining that while they are in Eastern Cape, they're not allowed to go to Free State. Yet it's quicker to go to Free State than to go to that. I didn't see it in your map. So probably something that you would need to probably tell us. Members, this is the presentation from Eastern Cape. I think it's up to you to ask questions. Fortunately, they've got people who are on the ground who can answer the questions. So I'm sure they're going to be helping each other to answer the questions. So okay, I see the First Lady, Matt Deswai. I see Mr. West. I see Mama Folo and Dade Khanare. Oh, everybody this side, up to Mike. Okay, Liz. Maybe let me, before you start, MEC, team, if you could take some of the questions so that when you answer them in one go. And everybody was there. I'm sure people would decide which one question is better to be answered by who. Okay, you can start.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Really, looking at the report, it really makes me to sigh. But the important thing is the Eastern Cape management knows about this thing. And at the end of the day, there is a lot of factors around, like you have talked about budget. I understand that they have identified what was the problem, and they are going to correct it. Maybe in their response, like you have said, I want to know how will budget allow them to do that, because you cannot like plan without attaching budget on whatever you are saying. Number two, among other things, I would like to hear from them how effective, according to their term, because we have seen some primary health care institution or clinics while we were at Eastern Cape. How effective are those primary health care? In a nutshell, I want to know, because when we talk about the antenatal care, we must be sure about our primary health care and how effective it is, because I can see, according to the report, it gives me a picture of a scenario where the primary health care is not really working properly. Then another thing, which is even budget related, the training of managers. Because when you look at other things, you can see that there is lack of management, or there is poor management. Where protocols are not available or protocols are not followed. And when I'm sitting here, I know that according to national, the division in Department of Health, the part in Department of Health where there is a lot of protocols is maternal health. That I know for a fact. Now, I understand that the protocols are not followed. Now, how effective is the management, and what is their intention to really improve the management? Because if we recall, according to the strategic plan of the department, empowering management is one of them. How effective, or how are they going to do it? Because if you are telling me that no kangaroo mother nursing, that is part of management. And another thing, when you say poor monitoring of patients, that is part of management. And even the very same staff shortage, you find that there is always a complaint of staff shortage. But when you look at the arrangement of duties or utilization of the resources human resources available is not up to scratch. Therefore, I will really want to know how are they doing that. Then, I didn't hear from their presentation, and I think it is very important for them to really allude to the fact from out of this death, how many were the bookcase or unbooked, so that we should be knowing the antenatal care, the health education, how does the people utilize the facility in terms of antenatal care. Thank you, Chair, for now.
Then I'm coming to this side, starting from Mr. West. We're going to move all the way because all the questions are going to be coming. But there's another interesting thing.
Yeah, their plan on clinic revitalization. I would like to hear it.
Okay. It's so interesting. You know, before you, Mr. West, Honorable West, there's a mention of doctors not able to do cesarean sections. I think it's worrying. I think when I became a doctor, I could do a cesarean section. And now, where does it come, this thing of doctors not knowing? In fact, the minister was telling us that on Saturday he did a cesarean section after 16 years. And I think I'm a specialist physician. I went to do specialist medicine. But I still know how to do a cesarean section, because we did it at that time when I was serving. It's so surprising. I don't know, but we will get it. Mr. West, Honorable West.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, from the NCOP side, we also went on a tour to the Eastern Cape, and just some interesting observations. In one hospital, we found that babies were sharing the incubators. There were two in an incubator. Surely that's not an acceptable standard. I know there's a shortage of equipment, but, you know, that was apparent. Another thing was a lot of the ambulances, there were complaints, the poor quality, I see it is alluded to there. But a lot of ambulances, for argument's sake, never had the basics, like oxygen tanks, supplies in the ambulance. Another thing was, of course, the referral system, which is also alluded to. I'd like to know how that is going to be resolved, because often patients were taken completely to the wrong hospital when there's a hospital a lot closer. But how are we going to overcome that? It should be relatively simple, but what is steps have been put in place for that? And then, of course, another complaint was for recruitment of doctors and skilled personnel. There seemed to be a shortage of accommodation in certain areas, drastic accommodation shortage. How is that going to be attended to? Do public works going to assist the health department? Please, if you could have some comments on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Warren. The next person next to you, I think that is because you decided to stop asking questions.
I'm covered.
Oh, yeah, covered. Okay. Okay.
Mankin. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for the presentation. Firstly, I just to comment to the Silver Pillar, as you know that we are always concerned about the numbering of the pages in this life. Because sometimes it becomes difficult to remind yourself all about the numbering when you see something on the slides. But now you're not sure which number is, therefore it wastes a lot of time. It makes a lot of time to be wasted. Also, as you said that in your comment in the first slide, that is concerned about maybe these babies are born by mothers whose maternal HIV status is not known. My question is that maybe if we can, we can't assume that these babies are dying because of the mother, of the status of the mother. Especially that we don't have the report for the maternal mortality. That is a concern. So how can we assume that maybe it's because of this a pandemic disease that the babies are dying? On the clinics, as you know that Les Mandela is around the Transkei area, which is vast, which is more rural. How are the ARV sites demarcated? The proximity to communities, maybe that is also another problem of them not attending the antenatal clinics, as that they are detected late that they have GPH. On the issue of labor management, I said some of the of my honorable members have touched on this, but just to elaborate more, the lack of equipment is really a concern. It shows really the lack of management. How can you have no CDC machine, no paper, even if you have got a CDC machine? There is no paper to use the machine. That is the lack of management. How are you tackling that? How are you tackling that? Because I don't think a baby can die or an infant can die due to not being monitored by the CDC machine. But as this baby is supposed to be monitored whilst you are still unborn, using the machine. It is said that no cesarean section done at night and over weekends. Yes, I understand that there are ambulances, but really this is a concern. How are you dealing with cesarean sections which are not elective, which are an emergency? Knowing that, yes, I understand that you have got transportation, but these air ambulances are transportation for, not for preventive and promotive measures of health. How else, what studies therefore are you using to see that they come, noting that there is delay in the EMS? What mechanisms are there in place to see that they on transportation, they go earlier, noting that the district hospitals don't do cesarean sections, most of them? You said that the staff is not registered in the MSS, about 312 of the staff. How come that are they not registered with the PDPs? Maybe you said that the shortage of staff in the EMS is because of that they are not registered. Who is supposed to see them that they are registered? And lastly, about the poor referral system, what are you monitoring? How are you rectifying what things are they in place to rectify this poor referral system which you are talking about? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Darekhana, it's got to be you, but I think Makanya has mentioned a few things which are very important that need to be answered. But there's something that talks about the shortage in the Eastern Cape. There's a shortage of staff. But there's something that talks about corruption in the Eastern Cape. And with that corruption, there's a lot of disciplinary hearings that are going on with dismissal. You know, there's a lot of people that are dismissed. I think the one paper was quoting a big number. With the shortage, how do you balance that? Because we've got to deal with corruption. But at the same time, on the other side, we've got a shortage. But it's very interesting. And the other thing that probably we're expecting, you know, Eastern Cape is 64% rural, if I'm right. I'm not sure. And sometimes in those rural areas, people have got their own attitudes and cultures. I know my mother, when she gave birth to me, she had to leave Umkanduli to give birth at home. That's a tradition, that the firstborn must be born at where you were born. And those traditions, they go with traditional birth attendance. There's something that mentions in the essential about traditional birth attendance. Because most of us, including me, I was born at home. Some people helped, but there's nothing that mentions, and I think it's still being practiced there. Do we do something with traditional birth attendance? Darekhana?
Thanks, Chair. I'll start by referring them to the presentation which was made by the Minister about the strike, that their provincial joint operation center only started operating, I think, from yesterday. I think all provinces were supposed to be ready at the same time. Can they tell us the reason why the operation center only started to be operational yesterday? There has been, under their findings, there's a lot of shortages, generally. that will make me assume that they must be overspending almost every year. I mean, if they've got so many shortages, so many problems, will I be right to assume that, look, this department is overspending, or they always finish their budget? Before the financial year ends because of the shortages they are experiencing. The issue of the Fleet Africa problem, I mean, it also got some publicity. And I think there was some dispute with some people and there was costs and things like that. Was the problem caused by Department of Health or Department of Public Works? Because sometimes you become victims of something where you have no control over, you know. I would like to know about that, because I think it got some publicity in some newspaper about, there was another company which believed that they should have got the tender, and the other one was saying, no, there was that. But I'm not very clear about who was involved, because now it has got an impact on the availability of ambulances and the type of ambulances which are there. In terms of this interprovincial collaboration, I thought there was you were the MEC of health. I thought there was some agreement with the Free State at one point. I don't know KwaZulu Natal, because KwaZulu Natal at one point was governed by IFP, but the Free State has always been governed by the ANC. So there was no agreement about people from Aliwal North moving directly to Bloemfontein and hospitals for help. But what is the problem? You know, because I thought we are in one South Africa. I think that problem has got to be attended to, because these artificial borders. It's really problematic. The other thing which you raised was that the 35% of mothers whose status are unknown. To me, it creates some problems about the impact of voluntary testing and counselling. If you've got such how successful is the campaign if you still have got 35% of the mothers not understood. The other question, which is a very straightforward question to me, is how many health workers are trained in the integrated management childhood illnesses in the province to address some of the things? And the other point which when I looked at this was that your presentation is entitled Infant and Maternal Mortalities. You don't have to respond to that, but in terms of your presentation, there's nothing about maternal mortality rate. In terms of, although you have entitled your presentation something else, but there's nothing about maternal mortality rate. Probably that's how we are used to saying that, you know, when you talk about child mortality, you automatically include that. Even if you ask, come and talk about the death of children, you also automatically link the data. There's something which I do not understand here. When you talked about corrected neonatal death, I'm not a health person. Can you just educate me a little bit? That's all.
Okay. Maybe before Emma, you come in, I need to say something. The minister said they were, the job of Eastern Cape came very late. But I must say, on Monday, I went to Matzikane Kazulu Hospital. I was there volunteering. I went there. When I got in there, I got there at about 10 a.m. And I got a stethoscope and I started working. But interestingly, there were things that were coming about how many people are on strike, how many people are doing this. So for me, it seemed as if there was communication already. I don't know what the minister meant, but I was there and there were things that were coming in Matsigane. Probably they were saying it started on Monday, not yesterday, so I don't know. The other one, I'm interested, maybe. You're just, you know this thing of Free State and referral? It was sorted out long ago. And when I was the MEC, we knew that everybody who was sick at Alol North could go to Free State. And in fact, I had times when I could go and see patients there. So there was an agreement. But the question that comes is, when somebody new gets in, do we look at the previous documentation of what was done, or we start anew? I'm saying this because there are problems in education in this case. And somebody was saying in the National Executive Committee, was asking, is it not because there's so many changes and the one that comes new changes the whole thing and start all over again? And even some of the things that are mentioned here are things that have been mentioned 10 years ago that they could have been done. So do we look at the previous records as to what has been happening and then we take over? But I'm not saying...
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. You actually touched on what I actually wanted to say, we're speaking as if this department is new, you know. I mean, you spoken about 4 years, that the task team was formed and this research or investigation took 4 years. I just want clarity on that, you know, because 4 years for me is a long time. I mean, it's like a term, you know. And then the presentation itself, it didn't cover infection control in terms of what are you doing, and even the tables that we've had, for instance, the February statistics on the babies delivered and then the death and all that, it's all low APGA, you know, it's all medical. It sounds like it's all medical, and in terms of other things, all is well. In terms of infection control, you know, we had a lot of deaths, for instance, in Joburg, where to some extent it was due to, you know, lack of hygiene, you know, a measure. And then you've got, you don't have numbers on your slides, so it's very, very difficult. The reduction on the background page, my question is just to say, is it feasible? Will we be able to meet the MCG? And then on the background, the stats for January, at some stage, we learned that from the spokesperson of the department, Sizwe Kupelo, that out of 23 deaths in January, out of the 54, 23 deaths in January were due to the compressor that could not supply oxygen to the ward. He's here, yes. I'm looking at him, actually. Yes, because he's the one who has seen this. So I just want to know, has that been fixed? And then what happened to the engineer? Because it was said that they'll be suspended because it hasn't been working from last year March, apparently. So we just need just clarity on that issue to say what happened in terms of that, because we cannot have people and not doing their work and then we have babies dying unnecessarily. There's no numbers on this page. It makes life very difficult. Okay, there's a slide on the findings that talks to the clinical... clinical, administrative, and infrastructure factors that might have impacted in the whole thing. So when you say clinical, I'm not sure. I mean, is it clinical negligence, clinical what? If you can just give us further details, particularly also on the administrative. What is it administratively that attributed to the whole problem? And then on the issue of not having equipment, I was wondering, do you have asset management, you know, and what has been happening? Because somebody must be able to see that, you know, we've got 10, and out of 10, only 2 are functioning, you know, asset management as a process. And then on the issue of underskilled staff, my issue was about CPD. Do you have CPD? And what is the role of HRD? Because they are there to develop and train. Though you alluded to some extent to say, because of staff shortage, you know, you cannot send people for training. But what about CPD? Are you able to cope with the CPD within the hospital itself? And then... Okay, this one was to the MEC, actually, about primary healthcare functionality, where you spoke about the contributing factors, teenage pregnancies, unwanted pregnancies. But I think on the next page it was answered to say the challenges there as well. But what has been done? Because you know what, we were there last year, almost the same things are coming up again, you know, in different styles pertaining to infection control and maternal and mortality. So, what has been done since we've been there last year? And then poor attraction and retention of staff. Do you have a strategy or anything to that? And, you know, who's driving it? What is happening? It's like we are talking about a new department, you know. I mean, we were there last year. Almost everything that is there is similar to all what we had last year. What has been happening? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. Mahmouda.
Thank you. I'll just focus on what I think is key, and that's that mentioned several times was nurse and midwife training is inadequate. So what I want to say to you, what should be being done about that and by who, and how can we be kind of instrumental in terms of getting that to happen? Obviously, that's something that shouldn't actually go another day without being sorted, and I know with the new higher education department, if the whole health training thing could well have slipped right through the cracks. So maybe we should do a serious focus on what's going on there. And then just this thing of Cytotec being available on the streets, I mean, what is making that so easy? And again, what should be being done there and by who? And is anything being done? And how can we make, you know, put the pressure in the right places to make some improvement.
Thanks. Mike?
Thank you, and thanks for the presentation. Chair, would there be any chance that we can get the full report instead of just the, you know, as well? Thanks. So I won't have to do an access to information application. Thank you very much. And then as far as, I just want to get some background as far as the budgeting of funds for the health department as far as the Eastern Cape is concerned. What percentage of the provincial budget goes towards health currently in this financial year? Then as far as the lack of management at the hospital, because it seems to be a huge, that seems to be a big problem which has been raised by several members. When we went as a committee in 2007, there was an acting manager. Then when we went last year, remember we split into two teams, and I wasn't in the team that went to Mthatha, I went to Fairview Hospital. But the same person was still acting 2 years later. Now, what's the current situation with the CEO of the hospital? And the reason why I raise it is because, I mean, you know, we've heard stories of, CTG, there's no paper and what. I mean, that's just basic management. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to sort those kind of problems out. Babies in incubators, sharing incubators, is just totally unacceptable. Did the management of the Mthatha Hospital, or the Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital, I should call it, apply or request additional funding from province over the last 2-3 years for additional incubators? And if they have, why didn't province provide those incubators to the hospital? And if they didn't request them, then that just raises more concerns. But let's just get... And then this is the last issue, Chair, because, I mean, most of the questions have been asked. As far as the training of doctors and nurses, I mean, it's shocking that some doctors can't do cesareans. I mean, and I think it's something we need to take up with the Health Professions Council and the bodies. And I think we need to call the relevant bodies in here and discuss it with them. I really do, because it's a great concern that people can't do the jobs, as well as the fact that, you know, to become a midwife now, you need a 6-week course, and they can't do the job properly. Okay, thank you very much.
You know, maybe we can answer that. I think on the HPSA that we met last week, who give us the accreditation that you can become a doctor? You are supposed, when you're doing your internship, you rotate through all the disciplines, and that's where you do your cesarean section before you become, you register as a medical practitioner. In fact, it's still happening, but now it's surprising that in the Eastern Cape you get a doctor who says, I can't do a cesarean section. Even before you specialize in anything, you must have gone to do cesarean sections. I think we all know that. We don't even need to call HPSA to come and tell us that, because it's something that is supposed to happen, and I don't know why it's happening. Okay, the last one, I must say, The Umaltul is going to be the last one. I'm not sure, members, I'm making a request. You'll say no if you don't want. I'm requesting that after Umaltul, we break for 5 minutes for tea. And then the department would be organizing itself as how to answer some of those questions, and then we come back. At least fortunately today, the parliament is starting at 3 o'clock, so we can go a little bit further than the usual time at 1 o'clock. Okay, Maltu.
Problems are huge. I mean, they are simply vast. And then the issue of the budget then comes in. Have we got enough money and all that and all that? But that is, a general statement that I'm making now. I was just thinking as we were moving on that it then perhaps means that even as we try to resolve these problems, there should be calculated targeting that this needs to be sorted out because it's at the bottom. It affects a lot of the areas that become dysfunctional because of this particular thing. I'm thinking, for instance, you may not necessarily think that way, but I think the idea of targeting is what I'm trying to put forward. I'm thinking forward that education, educating the public out there, education, which is part of primary health care anyway, education perhaps really holds the key, to a lot of the problems that we have. It holds the key. It holds the key to almost everything, that goes wrong in the end, including things like lifestyle and substance abuse, alcohol and all that. We've got to say that perhaps education there could be targeted. And then management, actually making sure that we target, that we need to have people who can manage, management. It becomes very, very critical indeed. There may be other areas, but I've just singled out education management. And you could actually perhaps look at others. And then I just thought again, as you were talking there, that, it also goes to education. We made some laws like protecting girls at school when they're with pregnancies, they should not lose out and become dropouts. They are dropping out. We have termination of pregnancy and all that, and we're getting more and more adverse things going on around that now. Again, it goes back to saying the more, it's sort of like we do a measure to hold the situation then, but we are not really going down to the bottom of trying to reach it at where it starts and get it sorted out there. Now, and when the increase in TOP places and unwanted pregnancies, etc., and look and so on and so forth, the more we get a demand on, the more people say, if you go out there and you talk to them, the more you'll find that they say, okay, I can be pregnant, and so on and so forth, because of something is lacking behind that kind of behavior and thinking. So now, that is, I think I'm making a point there. And now, I move on to just ask the question. Locum doctors that you alluded to, who are they? Who are these locum doctors? Where do they come from? And then the third thing I would like to ask is, do you think that there's any chance that we may just about reach the MDG goals? Or does it look hopeless there? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll have to, but there's one comment, FC, that I just want to make. In your report, which is a good report, you are showing us that things have improved, which is good. I think you've shown us that things have improved. But I'm imagining a situation where you've got 64% rural, where you were not reaching in those areas. And now you've got strategies to reach there. One would expect that at the beginning, soon after you have noticed a problem, the problem is going to become bigger, and then it will start going down. Maybe let me make an example. You know, it did not surprise me after 1994 that TB was a problem in South Africa. The reason why I was not surprised is because during the apartheid time, they were getting their statistics and leaving out the other areas that were poor. Now, with the democratic government, it went into all places. So then we were getting to know even those that were not recorded as TB. So it became worse. Not because there was no work. In fact, that becoming worse was showing that work was being done. Now, even here, if Eastern Cape, as I know it, about Kwalikulu and whatnot, now, if you're doing a good job, where even those people are understanding that I must attend primary health care, I must attend the hospital, you would expect it to be worse for a few months before it gets done. But yours has just improved soon after that. It makes me ask you a question. Is it true? Thank you. Let's go for tea, and then we'll come back and answer the question. Just 5 minutes.
Yeah. Hi, Mama, you are unfair. I saw you. You are unfair. Look, Bonnie. Look, Bonnie.
we will have to give preference to respond first to those who are in the call base that is directly interacting with the situation. But before that, there are questions that are more overarching that I will deal with first. And thereafter, I think the HOD will support whatever would have been made by the more operational people. And if in the event there is anything I'm of the view, it probably could be a distortion or not, I may come back just to correct if needed. Let me just start, Chair.
Sorry, before you start, the members of the NCOP are requesting that they will be having something, if I'm right in the number, they're having something at half past 12. Mm. So if we see you sneaking out, we won't be perturbed, no, as long as you don't disturb the congregation.
No, we won't disturb them.
They just came for lunch. So you mustn't be disturbed when you see them moving out.
No, thank you.
One other thing, I'm sure you remember the experience that we had when we were in the Eastern Cape, where one lady in Umtata said she was not able to do certain things because of a particular person in the province. And we invited her to come so that she could say those things in front of you. We would be interested, those who are hands-on with these things, to feel free and be honest and say wherever they have got challenges, so that they mustn't fear that we are equal here. So those who feel that certain things are not happening because the province is obstructing them, you must say it. We just be honest with us. I'm not saying that do it if it's not there, but I'm saying just be honest. Nobody is going to be dismissed because he has mentioned things that are not supposed to be mentioned. Thanks.
Thank you. Chair. Let me start with the, I think, none of the team would be able to, even myself, to speak in a contradictory fashion to what the minister is said to have said here about the Joint Operating Centre. But I seem to think that the minister could have been referring to an operating centre that would have been inclusive of all government departments, including police services, the army, etc. We could confirm that indeed we have been struggling with that. The truth, though, with respect to health, is that I've come to see that, in fact, departments are not the same. A school might be closed, nobody's going to die, and another department might be closed down, and it's unlike health. We have been struggling to get other departments to come along. We ended up going solo on the matter. As far back as Thursday, we had from within health, for lack of a better word, we had established a command center wherein we were managing all our facilities in terms of reports and monitoring and beginning to say where we need to move patients. We had to do that. By Thursday, we had established that. Throughout the weekend, we were monitoring. Of course, alongside that, you've got to encourage the other departments so that we can have a joint monitoring center. I suspect this is perhaps what the minister could have been referring to. But from the point of view of health, as I'm saying, we had long established that before that. But it was a departmental specific operation. Just to proceed, Chair, to matters, to do with the budget. I think there's an attendant question to say that given the challenges, the prominence of the problems reported about the budget, can we be able to meet these without the resources that are necessary? I'd just like to say there was a direct question to say relative to the provincial budget, what proportion is the health budget in the Eastern Cape? It is about 26%, just between 26% and 27%. I think both those two departments of education, they make about 74% or so, because education is 45%. of the budget we have, which is about 26% of the provincial budget, currently, almost close to 63% of it goes to cost of employment. Which is proving quite a challenge, because also with all the reported overspending that has been reported, that overspending seem as well to be taking in the area of cost of employment, which has an effect of crowding out the ability, particularly to see to the infrastructure as well as the resources necessary to support the provision of quality healthcare. It is a challenge. There is also, perhaps, what I must say, over a couple of years, a phenomenon that I think has unfortunately yielded a situation in which the department grew disproportionately, very large to otherwise non-core areas of health. We have a huge component, which is finance, which is HR, which are basically support services relative to growing the clinical part of the rendering of healthcare services. We've got more managers. At different stages, other managers were brought in to manage other managers, but not the growing of the core services in terms of the skills necessary for that area. It is indeed a challenge that we're trying to deal with. The Honourable Chair, you will remember, it may have begun with all the intended interventions to improve audit outcomes. Right from the time of the intervention of what was then a team from National DPSA, the IMT, it brought us other duplicated management structures that are sustained going forward, which has brought about this inordinate growth of the department in otherwise non-core service areas for the department. I'm just raising it as a complaint, I mean, as a challenge that is there. Unfortunately, with all those interventions, the area of strengthening systems has also not been very strong. Just on the issue of drugs and drug management, just as a case in point, which is another area of greatest expenditure. Perhaps other than knowing what the order has been made to a depot, what happened to that medication once it leaves the depot? 2 months down the line, you can have no record that tells you where did it end up? Did it get to a patient? Now, you are unable to tell, and we now know that it is an area that is infested with a great deal of corruption. Now, because there aren't systems, weak controls, it has actually yielded an environment in which corruption is generally very rife. There is no responsibility, because even the management function is so spread across. I mean, I can make the case right now. We do have a CFO in the department, but the CFO cannot be held accountable for all the financial transactions that are taking place in the department, because there's been created a hierarchy of reporting and other people not reporting according to the function that they perform. So there are structural challenges that must be fixed. And I do respect that honorable members, when they've been there some year down the line, come the next year, they expect to hear improvements. And I may be saying things here that day you do not like, but they are unavoidable, that you must attend to those and fix them. The area of discipline. A point is made here about who should have ensured that our staff in the paramedics ought to have been registered, why has it, why is it that their registration has lapsed, etc., etc. Indeed, it is the requirement of any doctor to make sure that I'm registered with the Health Professional Council. It's not anybody else's responsibility. I can tell you, in the Department of Health, as we have presently, there are doctors who have to be reminded that they are not registered. Just like we had the case with paramedics, that they need to be registered, they need to have a PDP license. Now, when you have to make people come back to doing what is expected of them, tough decisions must be made. And those include saying, if you do not see to it that you are perfectly legal in all respects, in a specific time period, action must be taken on you. I think this is the problem, perhaps, that then you have people going around and they make a case. How do you take action whilst they are, there is a scarcity of these skills? We must make a choice. Either we continue being a free-for-all, some kind of a banana department where anybody does anything the way they like and nothing happens to them because they are a scarce skill. Surely there can be no department that is run on such basis. People have got to do things the way they are expected. No. The management function. And I've been saying in other respects, Chair, that in fact it has got to be strengthened because every other decision, you see, even in the department right now, management decisions that ought to be respected and followed as such are easily sometimes replaced by, and I guess I got the sense that the officials got so accustomed to a situation where they've got to run for a political decision to supersede an administrative decision, sometimes on purely administrative matters. So I'm just saying it is that culture change that has got to be brought into the system while at the same time addressing aggressively the issues to do with avoiding occurrences of this nature. I just thought I needed to highlight those. There was also reference to the issue about the fleet contract. I think for some reason the wisdom that obtained within the provincial administration as a whole at one time was that all the fleet of the government must be outsourced. I think other provinces never outsourced the emergency services function. I think in the Eastern Cape, we outsourced even that function. And it then made us to be dependent on a contract otherwise that is not negotiated by the Department of Health, whose terms and everything else is dealt with by another department, in this case, the Department of Transport. Specifically this time around, is that with all the problems, it's not our competency, Honorable Kanare, as to what happened in the procurement, et cetera, we would really not be very much closer to that particular action. But what has happened to us is that with the reviewal of rates, et cetera, it has actually come out that the available budget we have clearly with the rates that have been, the rate cards that have been since agreed upon in terms of the new contract, they were not made with the budget at hand, with the budget we have in mind. With the result that clearly in terms of the available budget, we would have to clearly some of the, we can only just pay the rental in some of the vehicles without using them. Just even with doing that, you are not going to make it with the budget you have. So these budget matters, we have since referred to the Executive Council of the Eastern Cape. And with them, there are concerted efforts of engaging National Treasury with the support of both the Department of Health at the national level as well as the National Treasury, that there could be redress even at the time when the budget was presented. Clearly, in terms of just meeting the minimum level of service that we were doing in the last year with all the inadequacies, the budget that we have is not enough even to do the amount of work that we had to do last year. So it is indeed a very constrained environment, but with attending to these systemic challenges, corruption in the main, there's a lot we could achieve in terms of even presently, whether the manner of the way in which we are doing, we're conducting the business of the department. There's a lot duplication and a lot of saving that can be achieved that hopefully, when properly directed, progressively, we will be improving the outcomes as we have. The issue of the rural nature of the province remains a serious challenge, particularly when it comes to attracting skilled personnel in those areas. The reason that there is this unavoidable influx into Nelson Mandela Academic is that at least there is there a possibility, notwithstanding the constrained environment, because perhaps also in the true sense of the word, Mthatha is not that urban itself. Of course, relatively in the area it is. But there is a bit accommodation. Some of the facilities we have are deep in the rural areas, for which to have doctors staying there, it takes a lot of challenge, particularly with infrastructure, roads leading up to the connectivity, and all those things, which are still a problem to date. It becomes very difficult to accept professionals. In fact, I may say here, Honorable Chair, that our South African trained doctors, when it comes to that, in fact, I must say, even the West prepared to live in such conditions. Strangely, some of them were born and bred in those areas, but they can't stay there. So we have to try and trying to improve the situation in terms of ensuring that there is accommodation, but it's something that extends beyond the Department of Health. There would then be issues of safety, et cetera, which require a multi-sectoral kind of approach to resolving those matters. But these are things that we, owing to our own circumstances, have to deal with. The team then can take up some of the other matters. I was just laying the context here.
Thanks very much. I think at least we've got an idea of what is going on. The non-core function, you must be with it, MEC. I suspect one of the things that made me fired is that I was fighting for that in the Eastern Cape, and I was fired. Let's hope you won't be fired because of saying that you've got more non-core than the core people of the department. And I think let's congratulate Professor Naso. He's one of those who's coming from rural areas, and he's still working in rural areas. So I think you are doing what MEC is talking about, Mike. I think that's good that you are working in those rural areas, and you are a professor now in those rural areas. The pilfering of drugs, if I remember, MEC, there was a tender that was trying to sort out the procurement of medicines and even making them barcoded for the destined areas. And we have not seen it happening. And probably that would reduce what's happening. On the emergency services, there's somebody who was working in the emergency services who had a KPMG report. And that person actually took some people and did a corrupt thing and went to Bloemfontein. But he resigned, and the people that were under him, if we can get some information to what happened, because that person was corrupt. And there's documentation to that. But now the people that were told by him to go to that area were fired, which is good, because they're part of the corrupt tendencies. But himself, he was allowed to resign. And in fact, there's a document that says it was said that no, he's not going to be charged for any wrongdoing, but he can just resign.
No, thanks. I think let's deal with the matters of the presentation. Chair, I know that on the last matter you're talking to, I may be going to court on it. I know that there's quite a lot of storm about that.
If it's a court thing, let it not go in.
Thank you, sir.
The rural professor.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to answer the questions, about four questions that were raised by the committee. One element is that of KMC, incubators, and infection control. And I've decided to group them together because they are interrelated. As a history and a background to this problem, I would like to say when Nelson Mandela was commissioned, we had 60 babies in the unit at any given time or more. And the draining area hasn't changed. And when we were given it, Nelson Mandela, we were given 32 beds. And for the space, I would like to say the incubators, we do have them, but we don't have a space for them. So the incubators are there, but we can't put all those incubators into such a small space. There won't be an area to walk on. And the babies in the unit, we have got 32 beds, but in any given time, we've got about 46 to 50 babies in the unit. So now, Nelson Mandela also was commissioned and built by people without the knowledge and the evidence of KMC, that Kangaroo Mother Care is very essential. It reduces infection rate and also reduces the use of incubators. Now, the province is looking for a space at Nelson Mandela because structurally the Nelson Mandela hasn't been structured to cater for that. But we have already identified space. But because this is not new, we decided to develop KMC in Mthatha Hospital. So although the report says the Kangaroo Mother Care doesn't happen in Nelson Mandela, that is true, but Kangaroo Mother Care for Nelson Mandela does occur at Mthatha Hospital across. We identify a space there, and we were helped by province to develop that. But it involves transferring babies to Mthatha Hospital for that. Now, the infection control issue, if we come to the deaths of these babies and the causes of death, if we analyze causes of death by year, from 2006 to 2010, there has been an increase in the infection as a cause of death of babies. But we do not have, I want to make a difference between an infection in the unit and outbreak in the unit, because the committee members, when they went to counting and were investigating outbreak of infection in the unit, we haven't had an outbreak of an infection in the unit. But at the same time, we have an increase in the infection rate as a cause of death. For example, in 2006, infection accounted for 6.5% as a cause of neonatal deaths, and it increased to 2007 to 9%, 2008 17%, 2009 26%, and presently with this current investigation from January to April, 22%. So definitely we do have a problem of infection control. And the province is assisting us in terms of space and identifying the space for that. So that is in the process of being corrected. Looking at HIV association as a cause of neonatal death, I don't think the report says the HIV is the cause of this neonatal death, but there is a strong association between infection in the HIV infection in the mother and neonatal wastage. And the reason for that is an increase in the preterm delivery. So, in fact, if I can also give you an increase in the premature rate as a cause of neonatal death, from 2006, it was 35, and it, at the moment it's at 40%. So also preterm labor due to exposure to HIV is increasing, and therefore the birth of low babies, and therefore an increase in mortality. Now the other question that was raised was there a misunderstanding because I think newspapers, when they write, sometimes they write wrong things. January, we never had a compressor failure. What happened is that the unit is supplied by four compressors, and one of those four compressors became dysfunctional. But the unit was supported by the three functioning compressors. But what happened when we analyzed deaths, 23% of the neonatal deaths were due to hypoxia. Not hypoxia in the unit. It's due to what we normally term HIE, which is hypoxic and ischemic encephalopathy, meaning that the baby suffered lack of oxygen during birth delivery. So not in the unit. It's what you, in the old term, used to be called birth asphyxia, meaning that the baby became asphyxiated. Now, if I come to the corrected neonatal mortality rate, some units, the definition of neonatal depends whether you're using the WHO or other criteria. So as a result of that, we always like to say there is a corrected neonatal mortality rate, meaning that if you calculate it above a kilogram and above, and also if you calculate it above 500 grams, and so on. But in these deaths, there were babies who were 450, 480. So they don't fit the definition of a newborn death. They fit the definition of stillbirth or abortion. And that's why Professor Moodley and others, when they gave that, they gave it as a corrected mortality. I hope I've answered your question. Thank you, Chair.
I think maybe... One thing that maybe I'm not very friendly to the media too, but they are here. But when somebody says it in TV, I think what Uma Emma was quoting something that was said on TV. Now on TV you can't misquote somebody. It was said by Usizwe Kupelo on TV that the problem was that. So I'm trying to protect the media much as. We're not friends to them, but he said it on TV. He's not quoting a paper. It was, no, I heard him on TV myself. I saw him on TV myself.
No, it's a business. We can even request that footage from the SEC. We've never said that.
Okay, we'll request it. Okay.
Okay, who's the next one?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll just take a few issues that I can deal with. One of these is cesarean sections. And the question was, why are doctors being trained today who cannot do cesarean sections? It's probably not exactly a question of not being able to do cesarean sections. It is really about the experience in which do a safe cesarean section. If interns learn how to do cesarean sections, they do so in a few hospitals and probably may do an average of 5-10 cesarean sections in a 4-month period they are there. There isn't any required number of cesarean sections they have to do. Then after that, they go for community service. And if they go for community service, they have done those cesarean sections under close supervision. Now they are thrown out, they are as community service doctors, and they are supposed to do independently a cesarean section in a mother, maybe, who has obstructed labor, and that baby may be difficult to extract out and all that kind of thing. So the situation we find ourselves in at the moment is that a number of the district hospitals are manned by these doctors who have just finished internship and have gone out as community service doctors. And their experience of cesarean sections is that of internship, because some of them have not actually stayed with us to do community service over a period of time to acquire now the ability to carry out these cesarean sections independently. And that is a real craft of the matter, because that's what's going on. And because the community service doctors are expected to be in these hospitals It is a mandatory thing for them before they get to be registered to independently. They do go out to those places, but most often they do not stay for no for more than 6 months. Now, even if they brought them over to us so that we can train them, by the time we train them and they are getting proficient, they will go to those hospitals, and the next thing you know, they have left. Then another group will replace them who need further training. So we have been running around in circles with the community service doctors, and that's the main problem. Now, additionally, there are doctors who work in some of our rural hospitals who were trained in Tunisia, and some were trained in Europe, and I have personal experience of talking to some of those who are trained in Tunisia who said they never even delivered a baby during their training. And those who come from some of the European countries have never done a cesarean section, because cesarean sections in some of those places are done by consultants. So we have had some who have come to us to start training, but then they need more time than the ordinary person who has been doing the internship here, who would have had basics of how to do cesarean section and just need to refine their skills and things like that. So that's one of the problems that is occurring. Now, as a result of that, the majority of the patients who need cesarean sections are referred to Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital. And that's one of the reasons why our cesarean section rate is close to 80%. And we literally spend most of our time doing the cesarean sections for those hospitals that would have been, should have been able to do them. But because of those constraints, these are done at Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital. And that also accounts for the overcrowding now that occurs in the postnatal wards. After we deliver them, we cannot just transfer them immediately because they need to be stabilized, they need to be looked after, and some of them come actually with already potential infection. And so the overcrowding that occurs is to a large extent as a result of that. Then there was a question about how many mothers are booked, how many are unbooked. And for our statistics from January to May 2010, it shows 85.4% of the mothers that have come to us are booked, and about 14-15% are not booked. And that also relates to a large extent with the maternal deaths that we have, and a question I think was raised about maternal deaths. Now, from January to May this year, we have so far had 18 deaths of mothers, and that's a very regrettable thing. But 78% of these deaths occurred in mothers who had full-blown AIDS, and a number of them had not had their tests done in a good time. Some of the tests were done just at the time when we admitted them. Some had been done when they eventually went to the clinics to have them done, and some of them didn't have any tests done already at all. But they came in with a severe respiratory disease and with full-blown AIDS, and a number of them obviously delivered preterm, and those babies ended up in a neonate, and a number of them obviously also died. And so it contributed to some extent to that. And then the issue of, Chair, you did raise something about traditional birth attendants. I just wanted to say something a little about it. There was excitement about the training of traditional birth attendants back in the 80s and 90s, and WHO was driving it quite actively. But they soon discovered that, in fact, it was not really feasible to train traditional birth attendants and make them effective part of the healthcare delivery team. And so, by and large, the training of traditional birth attendants has been left to individuals, that countries that want to do it. But otherwise, it's no longer an internationally accepted kind of thing. So that's one of the things that would have been nice to if it was working, but the evidence doesn't seem to support that it works. And then about the referral systems, and the protocols, which were part of the management, the question was asked in terms of how management was organized in these situations. Now, the thing with the referral systems and protocols is, there's a clear hierarchy in terms of what patients should be in a primary health care setting, and when problems are identified at the primary health care level, where they should go to a district hospital. And if those problems are big enough to go to level one, level two, level three hospital, the patients should be channeled along those lines. And I think it really doesn't, I don't think it will really require written rules to be able to do that. I think everybody who works in those places know what their capabilities are and what shouldn't, who should go to the next thing. But what happens is that a number of patients may cut through, and instead of going to their primary health care place, they go to level one hospital, or they even come to level two hospital. And in the process, they sort of crowd the upper layer of the healthcare system, the referral system. And that has been the problem. And some of those problems occur because either there are perceptions that only doctors should see patients, and many people sort of believe that, and there are no doctors at the primary healthcare level, and so patients sometimes bypass these things. And so at the moment, it's not working too well. And there's a task team that has just been formed by the SG, and it includes Dr. Tim Wilson, who chair some of you might know, who is advising the SG on those areas. And there's a task team that has been that was formed, which is looking at the referral system for the whole of the Eastern Cape, and also it's going to look at improving and updating protocols. And we must also appreciate that protocols are not set things cast in stone. They change as evidence of care changes, and we need to be doing these things across the board. So that's one of the things that we will be looking at. Then finally, there was also again the concern raised about this outreach program, and Chair, you did ask what the role of the WSU would be in the outreach program. We have had these good intentions of carrying out outreach for years, and vehicles were provided by the Department of Health for those, and they used to be kept at the university. Now, our constraints were, to some extent, the number of staff that we had, both on the university side and also the Department of Health side, in terms of specialists and consultants. I must say that over the last 3 years, there's been an improvement in the number of specialists in most departments in the hospital. And while we're working with Nelson Mandela, we are really not, you know, divided in terms of that university, or that at least in many departments, the consultant pool is the same. And in addition to that, our number of registrars is also increasing, and the number of medical officers, some of them quite senior, is also improving. And I must say that the majority of these kind of staff, medical officers and the registrars, are actually students who have finished at Walter Sisulu University. They are now beginning to come back, and we are quite proud about that fact. And so we should be able to organize this outreach program better. But to make it work, we need experienced doctors in the district hospitals. And that's where the challenge is at the moment. And I'm hoping that we will be able to not only just attract, but also retain those doctors there. And if they are senior doctors, four or five senior doctors, then we add three or four community service doctors in those places, then they have a backbone and they should be able to perform much better. And when we go out for outreach programs, then we have people on the ground who we're going to interact with, who will learn from us, and we can also learn from them. And that should make it much, much better. But at the moment, that's the challenge, is that we don't have those people on the ground. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Prof. Bogart. I think maybe just to mention just a few things. We've got fundies on primary healthcare in this community. And I think they are worried what there's nothing that was mentioned on the presentation as to the problem. Because, as you say, Prof. Buga, that most of these people, they go to these tertiary institutions. Mm-hmm. What is actually going on in the primary healthcare? I think this is what they are interested in. But I think you have mentioned it. You know, each country has got its own laws and the way they do things. And one takes it. We had a presentation from HPCSA last week. And they were talking about how they accept doctors from other countries. It's interesting that they accept doctors, but never that come in. And they go to rural areas, and they get put there in the and you expect them to perform miracles. Where is that gate checking whether this person can do a cesarean section? Because in South Africa, you know that I cannot become a doctor without rotating as an intern through all the disciplines. But now if somebody is going to come from Tunisia, have never done a cesarean section, and he gets put at Balboom, where is our gate checking? Because there's something needs to happen. On the traditional birth attendant, all I was asking, maybe you, one of them was, you must make a diagnosis on me whether I didn't get hypoxia or not because I was not delivered in hospital. But the main reason why I was saying, is it really contributing into the death? Is those people who go who start there, do they create more problems for the baby deaths for yourself in the institution? I think that was basically the question that I was trying to ask. Not that are they still there or not. I know they are there. Those who claim themselves that they, I mean, it's like the traditional circumstances. There are people who are claiming that, look, I'm a surgeon, I can do it better than anybody. Yet that person is creating problems for the department or for our community. That was the question. Members, okay, it's 1 o'clock. In fact, it's just 10 minutes past one. I know Parliament is starting at 3 today. I want to get from you whether do we continue and then have a late lunch, or do we stop now for lunch? Everybody goes for lunch. But unfortunately, there's no lunch that we can organize for this session. I want to hear from you, members. It's your meeting. Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. At least I've got it. It's democratic. I don't know who was going to be the next one.
Chad is there.
We're starting at 3. But when we say continue, we still have to have the lunch break. Yeah. Please. So really, perhaps we need that 1 hour.
I thought we were all watching your waist, huh?
Thank you, Chair. There's a question I should have answered for you, in the sense that you said, is these findings true about the dropping and the perinatal mortality rate? Actually, as you have rightly put, you can never measure an indicator like perinatal mortality rate over a short period of time. It has to be a trend analysis. So we do see the dropping, but we also don't know whether it will be sustained. And we also don't know whether it is truly due to intervention. But there is a drop during the intervention thing. So we need to substantiate that scientifically. So scientifically, we agree with you. It needs some further analysis.
You notice that the ESNK brought one lady on the. Did you notice that, MC? That there's only one lady on the October. On the August month. You can see next to you. She's complaining. The member is complaining next to you. Okay, let's have the lady talking. The only lady.
Thank you, Chair, and the members. I will talk about the, I'll respond to the ARV site question in OR Tambo in particular and in the province as a whole. That after April 1st, we have decided to roll out into the entire province the HCT program. And even with us in reproductive health, we have done so. So even our record in terms of registers, in terms of antenatal care registers, they are talking to the new guidelines for all the facilities. Hopefully that this is going to be a nurse-led project so that we cover all the patients. Because even with us, we were questioning the issue of being tested somewhere else and then you go back in Gala when you were tested in East London, and when you go to Gala, you can't get this access. So hopefully everybody is going to have access. And the issue of nevirapine syrup, we have also rolled it up to all the facilities so that the babies, those mothers who decide to take the route of breastfeeding, could, the babies could be on nevirapine syrup. This has been the priority of the province because in our province, the National Committee report, the fourth tri-annual report, we are leading in non-pregnancy related infections. So we were targeting all those causes of maternal death, that is hypertension in our province, two of them. But I need to say, probably we as a province, in terms of maternal death, as some members were saying, we have some improvement with the, this fourth tri-annual report, 205-207, if you have taken note of it. We have moved from being the second last ever since notification to be number five. But we do have challenges. I just want to cite that. Now, the issue of traditional birth attendants, I'm also a product of traditional birth attendants. My name is not Nungula, it's Nungula, because those old ladies could not even call the rain, and I'm Nungula. So, but to me, it is by no means any strategy to reduce morbidities and mortalities, because we measure morbidities, most of mortalities most of the time, and we forget the morbidities. And that is why in some parts of the world, you still find those people that have a mixture of urine and feces, because those are serious morbidities. And they are not reported. So instead, we have come up with a strategy of these halfway houses or a waiting area, so that whilst the lady is not in labor per se, she may take a taxi, a bus, and go nearer the facility and await there up until she delivers. And we hope that that strategy will reduce the mortalities and even morbidities, because there will be accompaniment even in labor. It's working very well in Matati and Mount Fletcher, where we started with Taylor Bequest, where we renovated those. You know, most of our hospitals were missionary hospitals, and you'll find that they were rundown. So we started renovating them. But the challenge we have, well, financial challenges to renovate, and so that, and the question was that, should we, as a whole province, embark on this strategy? The question is yes, because our province is very, very unique and with different variations. You find characteristics of underdeveloped within the same province, and as such, we are still busy motivating for more of them, even in Kakadu, because of long distances and Kashama as well. But you see, this is not there. The concern about the emergency scissors, that concern, it's what has brought us to build the awaiting area, to couple to that, so that they do exactly what I said. The other question was about the issue of Cytotech. I think the Cytotech, we know, all of us here, we know that this has been problematic from the beginning, the days of choice on termination of pregnancy. And this drug was not meant for that. It is not an abortifacient. And it's a schedule drug, schedule 2 drug. But now, what the strategy, but even then, there shall be loopholes. There shall be some loopholes. But what we are saying is that now, we need to give information, education to our young ones at home, and we have started massive campaigns for each province up to the sub-director district, as even now, and we have built partnership with other NGOs like the Dettol and Huggies, what we call mom and baby shows, where people would come to the shows, and that would be a chance for us even to have services on wheels to boost up even our coverage in terms of contraceptive services. Remember, the issue of family planning created a bigger challenge, thinking that we were going to manage with the comprehensive service, the integrated approach of reproductive, sexual reproductive health and rights. But it's not working, and we, it's something that we are busy reviewing as activists in women's health, that probably we need to rewind and think about it. It's a country challenge, the issue of family planning.
Thanks very much. You are the queen of the group. Thank you, queen of the group. It's very interesting what you are saying, but there's one question that probably, one thing that you might need to answer, maybe the FC will answer. You know, Eastern Cape is a labor reservoir for the richer provinces. And most of the males, they used to go and work in the mines and come back in December. And somehow you find that there's a lot of babies that get born in September. But, no, it's true. As doctors, it used to happen like that. But when things change with the unemployment, so now it's true. Does that affect you somehow, that most of those babies that are born and they die quickly are probably coming from Gauteng or Western Cape or somewhere? I'm just asking. I don't know. It might not be. It might not be true. Probably it's something that you might answer.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to add on something about Cytotec, as you know, is an anti-inflammatory drug that is used for people with peptic ulcers. Its use is never registered for as an abortificant, but it's being used for that. Now, if you take what has happened with phenylephedrine, when we recognized that there was a tick problem in the Western Cape and the other places, where the DA was not able to control it properly. There's my question.
You can get into the special that way.
So phenylephedrine then became a Schedule 7 drug. And we recognized that although it is not for that purpose, we decided to put it. So I think at some point in time, we need to really look at Cytotec and its scheduling, and where it is made available. If you looked at what happened in that program, the other time they were showing on that carte blanche program, or one of these investigative programs, people were selling this thing on the road for 200 rands and 300 rands. And it's a very dangerous thing because people are just given this thing and that's causing the maternal death. Because what happens, this mother starts bleeding and she's far away from the center. They don't think that what is going to happen if you have an incomplete abortion and so many things. So this really needs to be a very controlled mechanism, and that we really urge this portfolio committee to take up seriously, because it really needs to be very, very seriously looked at. So that's it. The second thing, I just wanted to give clarity regarding the study. What we did is that we called these people from the National to come and do the study for us. The study was for the first 4 months in January, February, March, and April, because when the problem started off in January, and then there was the whole problems in Gauteng and others, by March we recognized, we got a report from our internal, and that report showed us a high number, but it was also giving us reasons for it. We were not satisfied with the reasons, and we said that there must be more to this. And that's when we got the national team in. But we need to complete and tell you how the study is going to continue, because that's very important, because you'll come back to the report. The study continued as a retrospective study to say what happened with these babies in the 4 months. But when you look at that, there was a problem about that, because you only had the baby's child. You didn't have the mother's child. And that's why you look at the heading, it says infant and maternal and infection. And I'm coming to why that is the study. So in the first 4 months, they looked at what happened in the past 4 months. Now they're going with a prospective study to say if any child dies now, we want the maternal record also, so that we can see what from the maternal side is contributing to it. Then as we said here by Prof. Bukab, is that now we've also asked to link that on with a complete study about saying going forward, linking it to primary health care. Bring the gap between a continuum of care, of primary health care, where is the gap in the antenatal services, how is the referral system working, and come to this year and tell us how that we can put a comprehensive solution together. So that study is still going on. It's a concurrent and prospective study, as I said to you, and we will have the reports from that. We get findings, which we won't be able to give you a report as such, because we can give you findings as they come through. The whole study is going to control for over a year, because as Prof. Nazar said, you can't take a quarter report and ask there's a decrease and we say we get happy, it's because of this intervention. There may be other reasons why there's a decrease in deaths at this point in time, and we have to look at whether sustainability and scientifically your interventions. But there's another thing that you have to study. You have to study whether there's a new test, that is, whether your interventions made a difference. Now, that's not looking at whether children die or live. It's whether your interventions have borne out. So in that, you start to do assessments and other things. So that's the first thing. The big question that came about here was management. As the MEC also said here right now, the issue about management is that we have layered management in the department. And that, to an extent, we concentrated quite a lot on putting management in place. And then we neglected to a certain extent the core function of health services and what we wanted to do there. So at the present moment, I wanted to say we're addressing that problem. In fact, we have got from the National Department of Health, the DBSA has been contracted to do an evaluation of all. They're doing an evaluation of all our middle and senior managers now. In fact, anybody who is a manager, a director and above, is going to be evaluated, competence. Okay, you got it. Test, evaluation of them, fitness to continue with the job, and how that takes place. So, that report will be coming out to us, and they're expecting. They've already started, by the way, and we had to just because of the strike now to try to say stop, but they said they're not stopping. They have completed 2 districts. We've got 5 more districts to go, and we are hoping that by September, October, we will have the first report on that with a clear understanding. And linking on to this, we said we have got the DBSA and Treasury Unity. We don't have money, so we asked them to help us to look at the organogram to say how do we restructure our organogram. Because as the MEC was saying to you, we had people in finance reporting to the COO with CSC managers creating a parallel system to the CFO system. So we need to streamline that and look at it. And then to boost morale and to get people motivated again, Mampela Rampela and a group called Letsema. They've got a program with us now visiting districts to say how do we motivate people to understand that we don't have much resources, but what we are doing is a service to people, and let's give that service to people, because it's got nothing to do with my needs. Like, we did an exercise of saying, people, write down all the problems that you have got, put it in a piece of paper, and you say, must leave all these problems out when you see the patient, because the patient's needs come first. And, I mean, just things like that. So we need addressing the question about management. I think the issue about ambulances was adequately addressed, in the sense that there was a Fleet Africa contract. It is now, we've got budgetary challenges, but we're getting external funding. We're going to acquire our own ambulances. I wanted to say the ambulance that we have got now is state-of-the-art. We don't have ambulances like we had before, where the honorable member from NCOP was saying that they were not up to scratch. Yes, we have a challenge in the sense that at that point in time, because we were not having the budget and the things like that, they were having ambulances that have got more than 200,000 kilometers on the clock still running. But now we're getting almost a new fleet, and so it's not feel it in the air. I mean, for the World Cup 2010, we were commended, and we were found to be the best prepared of all provinces for that. So the ambulance story. The other thing is that we need to say that we were very responsible when we handled the issue about the people, about the 312 people. We didn't deplete. We put a parallel process of advertising, retrained these people, recertified them, and at the present moment we have got almost 2,000 people, applicants, standing there waiting for a job. And we will be getting almost another more 100 and more ambulances. So we'll be employing another 300 people if budget is given willing to us to look at that. The next thing that we wanted to talk about is that the province has got a budgetary constraint, but we're not taking it lying down. We said we've got a 5 key strategic interventions, and at some point in time we need to speak about that. And part of the key strategic intervention, the first most important thing is the social compact. The social compact says that we are asking the institutes, the training institutes, the health training institutes, to reserve 50% of their seats for community-selected trainees. So a sub-district, we have divided the province into 25 sub-districts, so from that sub-district they will decide who is going to be trained as a doctor, nurse, enrolled nurse, community health practitioner, or a dental therapist, or whatever it is. And they will go from the community selecting them, getting scholarships, and going in training, but then they will have to sign a social contract to come back and serve the community for 5 years. Because as Professor Buga was saying to you, we train people. As soon as they get the skill, they're gone, and you can do the sums. I mean, if you are working in a private practice, you see one patient, you've got a consultation fee of 200 rand. Now, if we get a doctor for us, we can pay the doctor about 25,000 rand a month. Now, that same doctor, if he goes and looks at a private patient for 200 rand, he sees 10 patients in a month, is earning 75,000 rand. Why will he come and work for us for 25,000? So this is the law of that, and that will. I think we need to answer the question about locum doctors. What happened is that in the past, you had an organogram, and a doctor had to be allocated to a particular place. But what we did now is to employ 8 doctors who are not employed to a particular place. They are actually employed as in the head office staff as locums, and they are going to be trained. And these doctors will have anesthetic skill and surgical skill. They'll be put in 4 teams of 2 each. And these 2 will go to a rural area and stay there and get the doctor there to move out of that area for 2 months to come for training. And in this way, we're hoping that we'll be able to get it. It is not something that was done before, and that's something that we are saying that we need to look at. The next thing that we are saying is that to a certain extent, we need to say that there is unification of the maternity units and other things at Nelson Mandela and Mthatha General Hospital at the present moment, and some unification and optimal utilization of existing services taking place so that we don't duplicate things and things like that. The question the chairperson asked us was, there was a PPP on the pharmaceutical contract. That PPP has gone sour to a great extent because the time has lapsed. We wanted to revise that PPP. At the present moment, they are taking us to court. There are problems with the PPP unit. We are trying to revive that, but it doesn't seem that it's going to happen in the near future, so we'll have to build our own pharmaceutical benefit management plan, and that's what we're starting again, to get the depots, to get the pharmacists, and to get everything again, so that we're looking at it. We have said, and maybe it's not I didn't say it clearly enough. We have got into provincial relationships and we passed the National Health Council resolution last month. In that National Health Council resolution, it was passed that ambulance services can do cross-border. So now it is regularized in a National Health Council resolution and this agreement signed, and all HODs have accepted that. So there's no one now, no matter whatever happens, coming forward and going forward, can say, I didn't know this, there's institutional memory lapse or anything. It was not a resolution before, and the agreement was just this thing. So it's with all provinces. So we do cross over to the Free State, we do cross over to KwaZulu-Natal, we do cross over to, and they also do cross over to us. For example, in cardiac services, they're crossing over to us in Port Elizabeth at the present moment, and we have got a good relationship going forward there. Accommodation for professionals, as the honorable member from the NCOP said, you know, you can't attract doctors, you can't attract doctors to these areas. Unfortunately, we do not have an infrastructure budget that will take care of that. So we're looking at something what's called BOT, Build Operate Transfer, that's not yet in the pipeline. We're negotiating with Treasury. DBSA is looking at something for us, but it's still in the pipeline to say, how do we come to look at that? The issue that comes back again about training. Honorable Chairperson, I would ask you to please research this, because it is possible now in South Africa that a doctor can decide prior to registration whether he is going on a surgical line or medical line. He is allowed to do 3 rotations in internship, does not have to go through all departments, and we can get doctors who will not be fully trained in cesarean sections. And as I said to you, with the nursing, you can see with the 4-year nursing, with the degree nursing course, they don't do the 1-year midwifery as was previously done. And that I'll actually look at. We're coming back to what we are talking about in our provinces. We are training somebody else, which is called a next level. It's called a medical assistant. They are between a doctor and a nurse. And end of next month, our first 12 of them will be graduating, and we're hoping to put them out. And we're also looking at it. But at the start, they're not going to work in the peripheral areas. They'll be trained to get more skills. Then they will be deployed into the other areas. You see, what Prof. Booker said here is very important. In a 64 district hospitals, you've got to get people there who can do anesthetics and obstetrics and who are of experience, at least 5 years experience, because then you can go back and fortify that and this. We have made the agreement now, and we are speaking to the minister to say to us, just like we did with the 91 doctors, to allow us the ability to get doctors for that, that we'll have to start negotiating with budget to say that. But there are doctors that are prepared, who are obstetricians and anesthetists, who are prepared to come in and work for us in those areas. We just need to sort that out about the funding and with the HPCSA. The referral systems that we wanted to say is that this, in part of our 5-point plan, revitalization of primary health care, we're talking about a referral system. And what we are talking about, taking services closer to the people, so converting the primary health care centers into primary health care hospitals so that we can put 14 to 16 beds. And what we are saying to Nomvula, no matter whatever happens, the MOUs must remain. And what maybe she didn't come out strongly, all MOUs are ARV sites. MOUs means maternity obstetric units. So that we are giving priority to, because we are serious about saving mothers, saving babies. But coming back to the whole issue about this thing, the problem comes about, you don't have a computerized system right now to know which patient is HIV and which treatment and what treatment they are. Now, in the National Council, at the last council meeting, we took a decision that all provinces need to get onto a system. We are going to go into an agreement with Western Cape to lend us the ICAPA system. So once the people are put on that, and if they are linked onto us, no matter where they are in the province, we will have them on record. What treatment they are, how long they are, what are the last results, and so we get a more comprehensive disease management program for HIV than we have at the present moment. Because there is a big risk of this. Because if you don't monitor these patients and they don't in the default treatment, we'll have now resistance HIV, just like we have XDR and MDR TB. And we need to prevent that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, HOD. You want to say something? Oh, okay. Members,
That was the first part of the question. I don't think I think it was not sufficiently tired. So I'm not sure whether you want to ask more questions, which I wouldn't like to happen. But if you want, the blood sugars have gone down now.
So maybe if there are no questions, then why don't we go towards winding it up, the meeting, if we accept that member. Then it takes me to a point of thanking the Eastern Cape for coming. Really, we wanted to hear from you as to what is going on. And we have heard you. Thank you for the report that you have given us. I must say, there are just certain things that I thought we needed to mention. I think health is one of those departments that has been prioritized by the present government. Not only that it has been prioritized, we are worried as members of parliament, as parliament, that there are these MDGs that we need to meet in South Africa. And we have heard you, what you are saying. And probably with your strategies, we think that we'll be able to reach there, though it's very close. I think the Cytotech thing, we're meeting MCC next week. We're going to be talking to them about Cytotech. But I think more than it being rescheduling it, but if there's still so much pilfering around the country, even if we schedule it, it's still going to be a problem. I think what we need to work on is how do we reduce this pilfering that is going on. One thing that is still worrying us, which we need probably as this committee to assist you, is the financial resources. We know health generally is underfunded, both nationally and provinces. We all agree that it's underfunded. But what becomes paramount in talking on your behalf, because we're going to be meeting the Committee of Finance at some stage and talk about some of these things, is whether that money, when it has been given, would be used properly, would go where, to where it's supposed. But we're happy that they are dealing with corruption the way that they are handling it. Well, the one question that I thought I was going to ask, but it doesn't fit in Umkata, but it fits in the baby deaths that occurred in Ukatlanga. We were talking about the boundaries, but we're not talking about the borders. Eastern Cape is bordering Lesotho. And I know in State Street there are a lot of people who move from Lesotho to Eastern Cape. And some of those babies, they die because of the unequal health services on both sides. I'm not sure whether you have ever looked at that, because that's going to contribute to our MDGs if that is the situation, because they're bordering Lesotho. We were just in Free State recently, and it was a big problem of people moving from Lesotho to Free State, and I think it's the same in Eastern Cape. So it's something that probably you'll need to look at. I'm sure we're going to meet again. This is not the first and the last time that we're meeting. Most of the things that you have said, which gives us hope, we're hoping that you would have done them, and when we meet, some of those things would have been corrected. So, members, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape. Let's hope you play in Indonesia. That is your question, of course, and London. Thank you very much, media. All those that are coming from media, thank you very much. The meeting is over, so we can go for lunch.
My Oh, people are laughing.